Central, all right? So we're going to start off with just a real quick history of Dick Kwas. Dick was born in Alburnett, Iowa. I won't say when, but Dick was born in Alburnett, Iowa. Siblings, Max and Mary, correct? Grew up on a farm family, undergraduate at Iowa State University, Peace Corps in Ecuador, and then graduate school at Colorado State for a PhD, a master's and PhD with Tom Sutherland, and then shortly after that joined the faculty at Cornell, where he spent his entire career, and where most of us have come to know Dick. And certainly significant contributions to genetic improvement over time. I wrote up a little bio on Dick that's in the front of the proceedings document that you all got when you registered today. Would encourage you to spend a little bit of time reading that on the history of Dick. I won't take a bunch of time this evening because I'm sure most of those gaps will get filled in as we go through the program. But Dick, we're most pleased and congratulate you on your retirement and just really appreciate all your contributions to genetic improvement and specifically your involvement with BIF over the years. We really, really appreciate that. So I knew that a number of folks, and we'll introduce them as we go along, would have great things to say about Dick, and I thought, well, maybe I ought to go. I know there'll be some people that don't historically come to this meeting, so maybe I ought to do a little bit of digging and find some folks that might send in some letters or comments. My first phone call was to Tom Sutherland. So Tom was Dick's major professor. And I had a nice, Tom happens to be a fraternity brother of mine, so I've met him a number of years ago as an undergrad at CSU, but I hadn't talked to him for a few years, and so he and I had a nice conversation on a number of things, but mostly about Dick, and I said, Tom, if you wouldn't mind, just jot a few things down and send to me, and I'll share with the audience here at BIF. So the format for this evening's program will be I'll do a little bit of letter stuff, and then we'll invite some people up and kind of work back and forth try and keep moving ahead. So I guess I should first put a picture. That's Dick. Okay, everybody knows Dick. Okay, this is the young Dick Kwas. I couldn't get a picture of when he was a graduate student, but this is the youngest one I could find. So he looks rather professorial there, I think. So, but this is dear Bob, from Tom Sutherland. It was very nice to talk with you too, Bob, and wonderful you're going to recognize Dick Kwas in Columbia. I well remember, lo, those many years ago, sounds like a professor, lo, those many years ago, a letter from Lenoy Hazel telling me that since we had sent several excellent students to him at Iowa State from Colorado, he now had an excellent young man he wanted to send to us. His name was Richard Kwas, and he proved to be indeed a super excellent student, !!, which I can see Dick being a very good student. He proceeded to ace all the courses we offered and to amass a record the likes of which no one had ever achieved in all my years of teaching and research. But he remained quite quiet and humble over his entire graduate career. Eventually, he was invited to interview for a position at Cornell with Dr. Chuck Henderson and spent a fair time with Chuck. When he came back to Colorado and reported on his experiences in Ithaca, it was fairly clear to me that he had the job sewn up. He joined the faculty at Cornell and proved a winner for them as well, despite some health problems throughout his entire career. But Dick, we're certainly glad you're here today. And all who know Dick Kwas has my same opinion of him. He is a tribute to animal breeding profession and is most deserving of the honor which you're about to bestow to him. So greetings from Dr. Sutherland to his fine young student. So with that, the next person I'd like to call on and is, I saw Dorian a second ago. Dorian, would you come up and I think you were going to make a few comments. There he is. He was in the back. Maybe I'll give a heads up. The next one is Steve Catchman. So there's going to be somebody in between, and then Catchman, you're up next. So you're on deck. Dorian? So those of you that don't know, Dorian's a faculty member at Iowa State, a Kiwi originally, a New Zealander, new executive director of the Beef Cattle Evaluation Consortium, and longtime acquaintance and friend of Dick. So Dorian?
Thanks, Bob. Bob told me not to bother with any PowerPoint slides and just talk for a few minutes about Dick, so I guess I'm not allowed in the equations. But he asked me to tell a little bit about you know, my recollections of Dick. So I first came across R.L. Quass, spelt with two A's and one S, not the other way around, like most students make the mistake the first time, when I was a young faculty member in New Zealand, and I was trying to write some computer code to do an animal model evaluation. And it required the inverse of the relationship matrix. And it was a paper of Dr. Quass's, which described precisely how you did that. So I sat with that in one hand and a Fortran manual on the other, trying to enter this thing in the computer and get it to run. And I had a great deal of difficulty, but there was another PhD student next to me, Arthur Gilmore, who eventually, after my frustration not be able to get the stuff to run, he sort of bent over my shoulder and said, you have to start in column 7 with Fortran, which is one of those things I didn't know. So then a little bit later, I tried to fit a technique that Pollock and Quass had come up with called the reduced animal model. And it was a very appealing method because the short name for it was RAM. And coming from New Zealand, which is, you know, the sheep capital of the world, anything to do with a RAM has got to be good. So fitting a RAM model was a pretty impressive thing to be doing. So that was the next exposure I had to them. And it wasn't until 5 years later, 25 years ago, that I ended up in Cornell that I actually met him in person. And, of course, in those days, Cornell had a lot of characters. It was the mecca of animal breeding. And Dr. Henderson was perhaps the person that everybody associated Cornell with in the beginning. And what was amazing about Dr. Henderson was it was as if he had travelled back in time, or travelled forward in time, and had a chance to skim through the literature and see the incredible results, and then go back and he remembered the results but not quite how to get there. So he would make these extravagant claims that were always right, but he really didn't quite know often exactly how to get there on a step-by-step basis. And he had a student, a PhD student that came to Cornell from New Zealand, who made a career working with Dr. Henderson. His name was Shale Searle. And Shale Searle made his career by arguing that anything Dr. Henderson said couldn't possibly be right. You couldn't know that. And he would pedantically go through one line at a time to prove whatever Dr. Henderson had said was right. And sometimes it took him 10 or 15 years to do it. Now, Dick was completely different. Dick had this incredible insight, and it's just like that with the inverse of this relationship matrix. Dr. Henderson published a paper about the same time as Dick did, and it had the answer, but it really didn't have any enlightenment as to why you got there. And Dick just had this incredible insight into the answer that when you read his version of it, you knew exactly why it was and why it made sense. So that was some of Dick's early contribution. Now, as a graduate student, particularly coming from a place like New Zealand, we have the strange habit of having a morning tea break and an afternoon tea break and not drinking coffee, you know, at all strange times of the day. So at morning tea time, I used to wander down there to get a cup of coffee, and it was past Dick's office. And the days then were quite different from what they are today. When you came past Dick's office, I'd usually pop in to have a bit of a chat to him. And there was always smoke coming out of his office because he had this rack of corncob pipes, right? And he used to kind of rotate them. They'd get hot and start hissing and cracking and things, and he'd have to rotate his way through them. Most of the time, the smoke was coming out of the corncobs, but sometimes it wasn't. In those days, you knew it was time just to take your coffee and go back up to your office. And sometimes those days were the days that he was giving a lecture. And when he was giving a lecture, he didn't lecture like most people do. Most people lecture go, shit, I got a lecture in 5 minutes. What's it on? Find your notes, and out they go. But Dick would shut his door, and he'd decide what the paper was he was going to tell you about. And he'd work through the derivations of it. He'd come to the lecture with practically no notes, if any. And he'd describe the problem, and he'd just derive all the results straight on the board in front of you. And that was good because he didn't go too fast because he had to remember the results. So you had enough time to sort of write it down as you go. So that was a bit different from some of the other people we had around. Okay, so The other thing that I learnt at Cornell was about writing. And Shale Searle, as I said, used to go through things one line at a time. And one of his favourite sayings was, there's no such thing as good writing. There's only good rewriting. And anybody who ever gave him something to read would know what I mean. It came back covered in red ink and so on. Dick wasn't like that at all. Dick only ever wrote things once. He always thought very carefully about what he wanted to write, and he wrote it once. And he's written some amazing things, like the Bluff Handbook. He only wrote that once. He didn't even bother to get it typed. He wrote it once, but it's an amazing document if you want to know how animal models work. So he wouldn't revise things, and sadly, he's written a lot of excellent things that never got published because the reviewers wanted to make a few changes, and he couldn't be bothered doing any of that rewriting. And we sometimes have to do these reports, and often you do the writing, you write the report, you go to submit it, and it says you're only allowed 2,500 characters, or you're only allowed 500 words. And a normal person would sit down and go through it and delete this "the" and delete a word here and there and get it to shrink. Dick wouldn't do that. He'd just go to the last letter, and he'd delete backwards until he reached to the number. And then he'd say,
good strategy.
Nobody reads these Chris reports anyway. So the only other thing I'll tell you about, we could go on for ages about all of his contributions, equivalent models and so on, but one of the things that was an issue was fitting groups in a model. So normally when we fit a model, we have to say something about the expectation of the random effects. We normally assume that they're zero and that they're all the same. But sometimes we have populations that are not all the same. Maybe they're animals of different breeds, or maybe they're some imported animals. So he did a lot of work on this, and he came up with something called the QP transformation. And it's quite a problem when you're developing notation. You run out of letters of the alphabet pretty quickly, because some letters have certain meanings, like an X is the incidence matrix for fixed effects, and a Y is the vector of observations. But he had to write a paper, being a show-off and doing a lot of things for John Pollock, he had to write a paper that had a QP transformation, just to show off, you know, this Quast-Pollock kind of thing. Now, you've always heard about, you know, P's and Q's and minding your P's and Q's, and I just wondered what the hell that actually meant. And so I had a look up in the dictionary to see, you know, what that meant and what relation that might have had to Quast and Pollock. But it actually comes, there's a number of different explanations for it, but it comes back to a date much earlier than Dick and John. But John has made an amazing contribution, Cornell and other places, and now director of the Meat Animal Research Center, and he was the executive director of the National Beef Cattle Evaluation Corporation, so you know how good he is. But one of the descriptions for the P and Q was, it was about a bartender, when they were keeping a tally of how much you drank, they had to mind the pints and quarts. So if John is the pint, Dick is the quart. Thank you, darling.
That was pretty good. That was pretty good. So one of the things I found, I learned a lot about Dick. I spent some time at Cornell and used to really enjoy going into Dick's office. And one of the things that you learn right away as a graduate student going to see Dick and any of the former students from Cornell will attest to this, that if you have a question, you want to make sure your question is well formulated before you arrive at Dick's office. Okay? Because you'll start off going through the question, and then pretty soon Dick will say, "What exactly was your question?" And then that's usually followed with, you reformulate your question, and then it usually, what happens, Dick? Where do students go? They either go back to their office or they go to the chalkboard, right? I had a favorite marker in Dick's office, so he had a whiteboard. So I spent a lot of time at the whiteboard. One of the interesting things, though, that I learned about Dick, and I'd forgotten from our conversations when I was a student there, that you did a stint of time on sabbatic in Australia. Did a little bit of digging with Susan Herbert. Susan's in the audience somewhere. Susan, where are you? There, Susan. Right back there. Excellent. You spent some time with Heather Burrow and Bruce Teer in Australia. And so I contacted them, and they were most pleased to send some comments. And so I'll real quickly go through a couple of these paragraphs from Heather and Bruce's comments on Dick's time in 1983-84, when Dick was there on a sabbatic leave. He spent his first time at CSIRO in Rockhampton with Heather, and he had the task then of analyzing 25 years of data from the Belmont Research Station cattle lines. I mean, been invited to Rockhampton by George Seifert, who had informed Professor Henderson that he, George, was too old, too fat, and too lazy to learn new tricks, so he needed a new whiz kid on the block to do the job. Dick was the new whiz kid. So Dick's visit set the basis for a great deal of subsequent selection line work in beef cattle across northern Australia, as the EBVs derived from analyses became the foundation selection tool for cattle lines selected divergently for growth and female reproduction and downward, i.e. in a favorable direction for resistance to high temperatures and humidity. The most useful input that people like George and I could make to Dick's visit was ensuring the ready supply of premium coffee, whilst he quite literally hand-wrote the first blup manual for use in Australia straight off the top of his head. And Susan apparently cherishes this book quite a bit because she included two fax pages, incidentally, with the PQ transformation in it. It is Dick's nice. He has very nice handwriting, and you can tell it's all the matrix and then the notes below it. It's a pretty nice work. So they really appreciated Dick's time there. And since perhaps the most memorable event during Dick's visit was that Australia won the America's Cup for the first and only time in history, and surprisingly, Dick was the one who had to raise the topic when he arrived to work, in spite of the fact that the rest of Australia had went bananas. So they got quite a kick out of that. I can see you, Dick, being charged up. They're all going, yay! Yeah. It says, most recently in 2006, I had an opportunity to renew my friendship with Dick through an international genomics collaboration, and particularly through his work validating DNA markers for commercially important traits. So Steve Catchman, I mentioned, is next, and he'll talk a little bit about some DNA work you've been involved in. But Heather goes on to say that we had great plans to get Dick back to Australia a year or so ago, with much discussion on the need to break his journey. It was a long flight to Australia. So I thought perhaps a stop in Los Angeles or San Francisco. As usual, Dick's thinking was far superior to mine. He suggested, what he suggested was a stop off in Hawaii for 2 weeks both ways. I thought that sounded pretty nice, too. So we need to, it says, Heather goes on, we need to work on that stopover for your retirement, Dick. All the very best, and I hope we catch up again soon, Heather Burroughs. So she was quite ecstatic to participate in this, and sends her warmest regards and congratulations. Dick also spent, when he was in Australia, a little bit of time in Armidale with Bruce Teer. Spent 2 months there at AGBU before agreeing to come to Armidale. Had to be assured that we had an unlimited supply of coffee, so that was a recurring theme. I'm not sure where the pipe was in this process, but the caffeine was important. So most of his time here was spent preparing notes for the Bluff School that was held in February of 84, and of course was attended by a majority of Australia's then animal breeders, and helped to kick-start the use of the animal model for genetic evaluation in Australia. His handwritten notes are still widely used by animal breeders in Australia. He should have copyrighted that and published it. Charged a little bit. Help the retirement fund. No, I'm kidding.
Couldn't do it. Handwritten notes.
And handwritten notes then. Yeah, it had to be typeset. So his influence in animal breeding is still widely felt and highly regarded. Personally, I still refer to Dick's notes from time to time and provide them to new students. Bruce Tears, a research geneticist there at AGBU. Almost everything one needs to know about multiple trait animal model, and in particular the QAS machinery relating to the NRM and its inverse, PQ. I fondly remember Dick's direct and practical approach to our discipline, which are exemplified by his phrase, full genome scan. I was also impressed to find someone who drank more coffee than I did. We at AGBU wish Dick all the best in his retirement. Bruce Teer. So, congratulations from your friends in Australia. Obviously a warm and collegial relationship with folks down under. So the next one is Steve Catchman. Steve and Dick. Steve, if you'll come on up and get the mic. Steve's, as many of you know, a professor of statistics at UNL, and has worked with Dick on incorporation of genomic data and MBVs into genetic evaluations, among lots of other things you guys have worked on over time. So, Steve, the floor is yours for a couple of minutes.
A couple of minutes. Okay, cutting me short. No. Okay. I guess what I kind of want to talk about is we go back quite a bit of ways. Back when I did my postdoc at Cornell, first time in terms of meeting Dick and working with him. And for those of you at Cornell, they had most of us down there in this basement. There's this little itty-bitty window that occasionally let some sunshine on. They encouraged us to work when it was dark out so we wouldn't get too used to the light, I think. I'm not sure. But in there. For some reason, Dick's office is up where there is actually sunshine and good stuff like that in there. But one of the things that kind of made a big impression on me, working in the postdoc, being young, having a little bit more hair, come with a lot more confidence and stuff. Dick's good in terms of putting you more in terms of your place. kind of remember going up into his office and his desk and not quite sure what it was about. Had something to do with variances and covariances and stuff like that and things I should know about and stuff like that. And sitting there, and he put something up on the board, and I said, oh, no, that can't be right. And I think Dick got a little bit of a smile in there. And part of what I think he likes to do is to go to the dairy store in there, and he's thinking, maybe this is a good way to get some ice cream in there. And so when it made a little bet in terms of, I said, no, this can't be right. He said, well, let's make just a little bet on this. Went through, did that, sent me away, went back down to the dungeon in there, and went back and checked, and not too surprisingly, Dick was right. I was wrong. In there, and so going through, owed him some ice cream, and I thought, oh, that's not that big a deal. I should let you know that don't get between Dick and his ice cream. He reminded me every day in terms of going through until he got his ice cream in there. And I think that's a lot of ways in terms of the relationship in terms of going on in there. Looking at stuff kind of through the years, going through, doing work, presenting things and stuff, and send things off, and Dick would take a look at things, and if things weren't quite right, he'd point it out very, very nicely in there. I kind of remember the, trying to think, Dick's birthday singing telegram. Yeah.
That's a prelude.
It's a prelude?
It's a prelude.
It's a prelude. Okay. In there. Now we've been going through, I think most of the kind of interactions over the year have been quite a bit in terms of sending emails back and forth in terms of different projects, kind of going through, I think the most recent stuff in terms of kind of working with those molecular breeding values. I have a tendency towards sparsity in terms of stuff. Dick would make sure in terms of my going through there and making sure things got expanded, pointing out in terms of where I need to go through and do improvements and stuff. I kind of, when I have students working with them, I kind of think back in terms of, okay, how can they not know this? And can kind of go back and say, well, there was a time in there. Now, when I'm not quite as sharp as Dick in terms of, I never get any ice cream out of this entire process in there, but maybe I'll learn one of these years. Okay. Thank you, Dick.
We got coffee and we got ice cream, so that's good stuff. I can see why Dick and I got along well, like the same things. So one of the things that Steve has hit on was the role Dick played in graduate education at Cornell, and certainly many of us think that was a really significant contribution of Dick. And I remember well his courses, and so I surveyed a few former graduate students of Dick's and asked a couple for letters, and one of those requests was to Vincent Ducreux in INRA in France, and so he sent a couple of paragraphs here that I'll share with you, but maybe perhaps the most interesting thing. Well, this is in the conference room in B47 Morrison Hall, if I remember right. I think there's whiteboards in there now, but certainly I would have liked to have been the fly on the wall the day the singing telegram showed up for Dick's birthday. So he had a good day that day with some entertainment, and I can see the students well sitting back and smirking. But Vincent shared a few words. Says, I was one of Dick's PhD students from 1984 to 87. That period was, I think, the international climax of the golden age of animal breeding department at Cornell. Imagine 15 graduate students from 13 different countries, a very global atmosphere. And certainly when I was there, there was more international students than U.S. students, which really enriched our community and friendships a lot. So Vincent says, a very global atmosphere, many cross-border friendships, and also serious work under the direction of, and on the other hand, three monuments, Dick, John Pollock, and Dale Van Vleck. And on the other hand, a surrogate mother for all overseas students, Susan Herbert. So Susan is a very integral part in keeping the graduate students showing up to work and sorted out and making sure our classes are all registered and in good care of us. So I still regularly meet many of my fellow graduate students from that period. Most of us are deeply involved in genetic evaluations in different countries using what Dick taught us over and over again. I wanted to find a simple example to illustrate how exceptional a person Dick is. Here's one. The take-home exam of his first graduate course on genetic evaluation methods in 1986 was, first question, summarize the course in 2 pages. Second question, invent 4 problems and solve them. Sounds like a professor that had a trip the night before the exam was due. But when I think about it, this exam superbly sums up what I learned from Dick, which goes far beyond theory and formula. First, be sure you understand what you are doing well enough to explain it simply to others. And second, be ambitious. If you think of a new challenge, go for it without hesitation. If you have an idea, never be afraid to try it. So, life lessons by Dick Kwas. So Dick taught me how to become a true research scientist, the most exciting and rewarding job I could have dreamed of. Dick, you are my guru, a kind of scientific father, but without the implicit distance that these words usually carry. I feel very privileged to be able to participate from a distance at this event organized in your honor. I owe you so much. How could I thank you enough? So attached is a picture of your birthday in 1986. Remember the singing telegram which arrived during class. With very warm thoughts and hoping to see you soon, Vincent. So nice words from a colleague in France. And another international student shortly after that period of time in the 90s, late 80s, early 90s, was Bert Klein. Bert is now at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center. But Bert had a very significant role in development of the multi-breed genetic evaluation at Cornell. And he has some kind words and some frank admittances here. So I thought this was really interesting. It's a little longer, so bear with me. There's some good stuff in here. So it says, in 88, I entered Cornell as a PhD student. Initial contacts were made the previous year when I was an exchange student at Cornell from the University of Wageningen. I can never say that quite right. Hopefully that's close enough. In the Netherlands, Dick became my major professor over what turned out to be an extended period of time. I finally finished my PhD 7 years later in 1995. This was in part due to my involvement with the American Simmental Association genetic evaluation program that was being reprogrammed from a sire maternal grandsire model to an animal model. The research associate was working on the project left Cornell, and I was selected from among a group of graduate students to finish the effort. Why they decided to ask me, a student with an interest in dairy, to work on beef cattle has never been explained to me. Others might have different opinions on why it took me so long to get my PhD, but I prefer to blame it on programming the Simmental animal model. Because of this extended stay, I got to know Dick quite well, and it showed me that he really was interested in the practical application of theory that he had developed. For my thesis project, I worked on international genetic evaluations for conformation traits in Holsteins. The methodology that I worked on started with some handwritten notes by Dick during his sabbatic in Switzerland, which he dropped on my desk with a comment to take a look at it and see if it might work. Later, when I worked for the Holstein Association, I used this method to improve the international genetic evaluations at Interbol. One of the main things was to bring down calculations from, at that time, a three-day process to 2 hours on the same computer. As you can imagine, these methods are still being used by Interbol. This shows another area of animal breeding world in which Dick's work has had, and in this case, little-known impact. Without Dick's initial notes, Interbol might still be using their inefficient methods. After I finally graduated in 95, I took a position as a researcher with ASA at Cornell to develop and program their multi-breed evaluation. We were looking at large amounts of data that had to be analyzed in a complex model in a reasonable amount of time on a computer with a minimal amount of time. Dick was not satisfied with a program that got the job done. The program had to be, in quotes, elegant, and therefore would become fast. You might chuckle when you hear Dick and elegance mentioned in the same sentence. However, this elegance has always been part of Dick's work. Without methods such as reduced animal model, fast inversion of relationship matrix, etc., the early genetic evaluations would not have worked. This is an example that shows Dick's commitment to having research support the practical application. The lesson for all you programmers out there is to not just program, but to sit down and think before you program. Finally, I want to share a story that happened on one of our trips from the annual Simmental meetings in Denver. We were scheduled to fly back to Ithaca by way of Pittsburgh. The problem was a large snowstorm was forecast for Pittsburgh, and John decided that we would stay in Denver for an extra night, and that would be sleeping at the old Pittsburgh airport. The question then became what to eat or where to eat for dinner. Dick insisted that we go to the Holiday Inn near the Stapleton Airport, which is still a Holiday Inn, incidentally, because they had the best pork tenderloin. He then proceeded to describe how they made them. Here's what I recall. They take a pork tenderloin and a large meat cleaver, and then they pound the H-E double hockey sticks out of it until it's paper thin, larger than a plate, and tender. It then gets breaded and fried. It was a great pork tenderloin. However, I still don't understand why you have to tender a tenderloin, nor have I ever learned how Dick knew about this tenderloin at this particular Holiday Inn. So you might want to think about that and explain yourself later, Dick. Having seen Dick eat that piece of pork showed me that you have to keep trying, because if you don't think that Dick would give up a Stapleton Holiday Inn pork tenderloin for a steak. Dick, you have an incredible influence on my life by showing me that research should be in support of real-life questions. You also showed me that sometimes you have to sit back and think, with or without a pipe, before you do things. If there is one person deserving of a tribute, it is you, and I wish I could be there to attend. Enjoy the evening, and hopefully our path will cross sometime in the near future. Bert Klei. So, nice remarks from Bert. Clear thing I remember from Dick, a couple of times we'd be working on some project, and he would send me a piece of MATLAB code. Dick uses MATLAB a lot, and I have since learned to code reasonably well in MATLAB, but I'd get a piece of code that did a whole bunch of things, and it was 6 lines long. So I'd look at it, and I have to go ask him, because it was 6 lines of code and 0 lines of comment. So if for those of you as programmers know, no comments make it challenging, but Dick could always explain what it was and why it was elegant and fast. So I appreciate Bert's comments a lot. And I've lost my next page. Brent Woodward. Brent. Brent was a graduate student at Cornell as well, and Brent's now a research scientist at Igenity, and I know prepared a few remarks. I'm still going to look for my page because I remembered you were next, but I'm going to find my page. So if you'll stand right there, you can do your business, and I'll see if I can find mine. So,
sure, fair enough.
Brent?
Thanks, Bob. Actually, it's kind of interesting, Dick. I'm certainly honored to be able to be here and talk a little bit about graduate education while at Cornell. I think ever since I was a graduate student, I pretty much just would make slides up with bullet points and wing it from there. And I found myself thinking I needed to write something down in text form because I felt that this was perhaps more important. So I'm not sure what that says about when I go and present a research paper results or something like that in comparison to this, but I did feel like it would be interesting or important to honor you with being sure I said some things that would maybe draw back on those years of graduate education at Cornell. So on behalf of not only myself but other graduate students, and I know there's others making contributions here, but I'll try and make some highlights. One of the things that I thought about in terms of the impact on graduate education was not just students that went to Cornell, but I think Dick has had a lot of impact on students that didn't ever pass through the doors of Morrison Hall at Cornell, but had impact or were impacted by former Cornellians or by getting these infamous blip notes that those of us that were at Cornell or any place Dick was on sabbatic would have seen over the years. And so certainly that impact is quite pervasive when it comes to animal breeding and genetic students. One of the things that one of our colleagues at Guelph, I myself sent out kind of some feelers to see what other people might remember from Dick's graduate education impact, and one of my colleagues at Cornell reminded me about the infamous Guelph, Cornell-Guelph colloquiums that we had in later years. Michigan State joined in on those, and so it was where the graduate students and professors would get together. And apparently at some of the other places, maybe not so much at Cornell because we interacted with you on a daily basis, but Dick had quite the reputation, and this would be passed on from the older graduate students to the newbies, and they'd be quaking in their boots getting up to present their research the first time we got together because they knew Dick Quast was going to ask an extremely probing question that would make them think quite deeply on the spot. And certainly for a new master's student in particular, that could be disconcerting. So fortunately, I think what many students would say after the fact years later would that was everybody was learned a lot from that and were better off for those probing questions had you not asked them. So good that you were willing to do that. As I think back on the key things, we've already heard from Vincent and Dorian about the blup and mixed model methodology and so on. And one of the things that I would say, if you think about the impact of Dick's teaching on blup and how pervasive that's been in livestock improvement and in successful careers of graduate students of Cornell and other universities, it's pretty widespread. I just started thinking about all the different areas of work that those students have gone into when you think about every facet of academic positions from research extension and teaching to higher levels, to deans of agriculture, colleges, and so on. People have started out learning in the educational classes that Dick was offering. Not that they're using that today, but in fact that had an impact on them and their successful careers. You think about private industry when you're looking at breed associations, if you qualify it as private industry or not, breeding companies such as swine and poultry breeding companies, and of course more recently genomics companies as well. One of the things that one of the folks talked about, I'm curious just how many former students that went through Dick's classes on mixed model methods and blup and so on are here today. Can you give me a show of hands? Because I'm going to ask you a specific question. It's not as many as I expected, but Dick had a specific gesture that he would use when he was at the board, and he's written out the mixed model equations, and he wants to talk about inverting those mixed model equations to get the solutions. And I'm curious if the same gesture pops into your mind, because one of the people that I surveyed immediately, that's what they brought about. And so Dick's up there, and there's matrices all over the board, and he's sitting there, and he's talking about how you're going to solve these equations. And this is his international known symbol for inverting that equation, was rocking his hand back and forth. And, this student, former student that I talked with, actually remembered that and reminded me of the fact that that was a pretty common thing that Dick would do. I guess one of the things that when I think about Dick's impact relative to, we took lots of stats classes as students at Cornell. In fact, I always brag about the fact that I had 10 stats courses, and of course that doesn't mean I don't make mistakes occasionally, but in reality I think one of the things that Dick did well was help us tie all that stats theory together into the application. And you've heard other people already talk about bringing it down to the application and being able to apply it in a real-world setting, which, of course, is what we're all about once we get into the career that we've ended up in. I guess when we kind of shift gears here, I want to talk about the fact that I think, although Dick was known for asking those probing questions, he was always available for you to go and ask him questions. And I think Steve talked a little bit about that. Dorian talked about that. And so he had very consistent time in the office, and he was always available there for you to ask, no matter how dumb the question is. I don't recall Dick ever laughing at me when I asked those questions. And
the word was, go to the board.
That's right. You might have to sweat a little bit while at the board, but I guess the follow-up to that is he made you think about it. And you might have to go away and think about it. But in reality, even today, as I raise young children of my own, I try to think about trying to get them to think about rather than just hand them the answer. And I think that's pretty critical as well as we think about being successful in life. I was on a little bit of R&R last week, and I was floating along in the Gulf of Mexico thinking about some things to say, and it dawned on me how many students must have crossed various oceans to come to Cornell to learn from John and Dick and Dale Van Vleck, as was mentioned earlier, the three primary ones that were tied into beef cattle genetics anyway, as well as dairy. And I thought about someone, Vincent, I guess, mentioned the 15 students. Well, there were 15 students at one point when I was there, and there were only three from the U.S. And I started counting the number of countries that were represented, just of the ones that I knew about, and I passed 20 quite easily. And I'm pretty sure that probably every continent has been represented at Cornell, and at least 30 to 40 countries just in the ones that I could come up with. So when you think about that and those people going back, most of them, to their representative continents and countries, the educational opportunities that they were afforded at Cornell has made a huge impact on livestock improvement throughout the world. I'm going to skip over a couple of things here, but I guess as I look through this, I would say that Dick has certainly been one to... When I think about from a career standpoint, I've had, since leaving Cornell and becoming a faculty member, and I've done private consulting and now working in private industry, a brief stint at USDA, had many discussions, some pretty intense with Dick, and I know other people have had those intense discussions. One of the real beauties of Dick is that you can have that real intense discussion, you can walk away in disagreement, and you'll still not have any negative implications of that later on because, you know, that was all in the business of academia and scientific debate. And I really like that about Dick. And I would say that, Dick, you're certainly one of the most honorable scholars and a gentleman and an excellent teacher in the industry or in the academia world, and appreciate all that you've done for us in the graduate education realm, not to mention all your research. Thank you.
Thank you, Brent. So I'd ask a number of other people for comments, and you're gonna get a kick out of this one. So one of the people that I know is really close to Dick is Susan Herbert, who's sitting in the back. Susan, how many years were you? You're still at Cornell, but with Dick, 30 years. Okay, so she knows Dick pretty well. She goes on, and she wrote a few comments that she wanted me to share, and it says, Dick was already a faculty member of the department when I started working here in 77. He had an office and secretary on the first floor, and I was located in the basement with John Pollock, Dale Van Vleck, and Bob Everett. It wasn't until sometime into the mid to late 90s that he came under my jurisdiction, when we all moved into the former offices of the Dairy Records Processing Lab. This sets up the relationship quite well. Okay, anyone who's had the opportunity to visit us in our spacious new office suite probably was exposed to the animal breeding intercom system, also known as the Abyss. Okay, so there's a big sort of four offices on the corner with Susan in the middle, and it's a big space, and it's all Johnsonian-era tile. So it's got nice acoustics, okay? So the system works like this. Dick, parentheses, screaming, Susan! Susan screaming back, what? Dick screaming again, come look at the puppy picture I found on the web. Some say we did it to drive Bob Everett crazy. So interestingly enough, my office was way down the hall, two doors away, and I could still hear them. So the intercom system worked quite well. So Susan shares another story about Dick's last PhD student was a guy from Brazil named Roberto Torres, who I subsequently have a letter from to share. So these stories are connected and unintentionally connected. It's interesting. People remember the same sorts of things. So Roberto is one of the nicest, gentlest people on the planet. He is. He's a very, very kind man. He spent a lot of time talking to Dick. I'd be at my desk and could hear them in Dick's office chatting away about his research. Then Dick's voice would get louder and louder and louder and then shriller, like one of those horns they're blowing at the World Cup. Every now and then, I'd hear Roberto say something, and then Dick would go off on another rant. I was getting ready to set off the fire alarm to halt the carnage when Robert would come out and give me a sickly smile as he went back to his office, which was down by me. After listening to one of too many of these encounters, I marched into Dick's office and told him that he couldn't keep yelling at Roberto like that. Dick looked startled and said, "I wouldn't yell at him if I didn't think he was worth it." So if you've ever been yelled at by Dick Kwas, I advise you to regard it as tough love. And that is indeed true. Brent's comments, you could disagree with Dick, and then you'd leave disagreeing, but you could still have a cordial and close relationship. So we've always appreciated that about you, Dick. So here's the follow-up from Roberto. And so you've had a positive impact. Says, "Dear Bob, you asked me to say a few things about Dick Kwas and his contribution to the Brazilian beef industry, and I'll try to do my best. First, I would like to say a few words about him, Dick, as an advisor. To start, I would have to say that I could not find a better one," all in capital letters. "His door was always open, his questions were always challenging, and our discussions were very fruitful. When I had just arrived at Cornell, I went to talk to him, and he said, 'I don't want you to choose classes because they're easy to get good grades. I want you to choose those that will help you learn the most.' He was there to help us become the best researcher we could be. In my point of view, he succeeded." Roberto goes on to talk about Dick's contributions in a number of ways, the Simmental multi-breed evaluation, Bayesian procedures and the work Dick did there with that evaluation and inclusion of external EPDs. Finishes with, "So please let him know I send my compliments. And he wished that he could be here. Even if I was there, I know that I would not be able to express properly how much I admire him both as a person and a scientist." So I'll share the rest of this letter with you, Dick, you've got warm regards from Roberto in Brazil, even though you yelled at him. So that's good. It's good. You trained a good scientist. So the next, we've talked a fair bit about Dick's contributions to the Simmental genetic evaluation. The next person, Jerry Lipsy. I see Jerry's here. Jerry, if you'd come down. I know when I came to Cornell, worked with Jerry, worked with John on the multi-breed evaluation. So I asked Jerry to make a few remarks. And
Bob Weber, thank you. What a wonderful and perfect night and place. Dick Kwas, in front of all the people who've admired you and you've known for so long, spend a few minutes with you. But before we do that, there's a lot of foreigners in this office. I spent 17 beautiful years of our life, Peggy Lipsy and I spent 17 years in this community, on this campus. My view, one of the great agricultural campuses in the entire world. And there's a lot of foreigners in this audience, but listen to this. If I were to say M-I-Z, you'd say
Z-O-U.
Thank you. I bet the Canadians have no clue what happened right there. Professor Kwas, I've learned quite a bit about you tonight, so I want to role play with you for a moment. And if you would, let's pretend that we're in a courthouse, in a courtroom. I'm the questioner, you're the questionee. Okay? So if you'll just say yes or no, let's work our way through this a little bit, because there's a few things I want to know. One is, have you been smoking in your office? You'd respond and say? Can you answer yes or no?
Ever?
Yeah, ever, yeah. He said yes. Two is, so, you've been eating ice cream. Has that been on your dietary regimen? We'll come back to that. Three is, do you love the Boston Red Sox?
No.
Are the New York Yankees a better choice in your mind? Are you a bird watcher? Do you think I have a clue, really, and any idea what blup and animal model are?
No.
Do you think most of the other folks in this audience do?
Some have.
Could you... Okay. Professor Quass, have you ever heard of a man named Hans Grasser? And that European person lived in Australia, yes or no?
He does now.
Mm-hmm. And so I understand that he read your papers and Professor Pollack's papers and on bluff and animal model.
He may have.
Did he build some models in Australia to use those in beef genetic evaluation?
Well, it was because of him we called the Simmons office.
In fact, did he... That's true. And in fact, he suggested that you and John Pollack call the American Simmental Association.
He said that they were looking, and we finally got it up enough courage to call Earl Peters.
Have you forgotten to say this is a yes or no thing here? And so, you did. And in fact, the staff and the Breed Improvement Committee of the American Simmental Association were very intrigued with your bluff and animal model. Yes or no? Oh, and so you decided to have a meeting though with the Breed Improvement Committee in Chicago, Illinois, and that meeting ultimately came about 2 decades of research cooperation service between Cornell University and the American Simmental Association, correct? And the people, tens, perhaps thousands, hundreds and thousands of people in this world benefited because of those 2 wonderful decades that Cornell and ASA worked together. And I think we want to tell you thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you, Jerry, and welcome back to Columbia and Mizzou. So one of the other folks that Dick had done some sabbatic time, I think sabbatic or visiting science with Fritz Schmitz Zoo. Did I say that right? Fritz was a PhD student just finished a PhD student. I'll read part of Dick's or Fritz's letter here. Dear audience, I was asked to share with you my experience with Dick Quass. This is a great pleasure for me, as I owe him an awful lot. Here's some background information. In the fall of 1988, I had the opportunity to go to Cornell University as a visiting fellow for 1 year. Having just finished my PhD dissertation at the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology in Zurich in genetic evaluation of dairy cattle, it was an obvious choice to go to the prestigious animal breeding group in Ithaca, the origin of Blup, etc. From the first moment on, I was very impressed by the faculty members there, not only sound knowledge about theory that I expected from them, but also their close collaborations with the cattle industry. I felt very lucky to have Dick Quass as my advisor. For me, one of the most outstanding characteristics of Dick Quass was, on one hand, he was the brain of the group with his theoretical knowledge and abilities, and on the other hand, was also very interested in the practical problems of cattle breeders and eager to grab their needs and to develop for them directly applicable solutions on a sound theoretical background. Together with his colleague, John Pollack, they formed what I can call a dream team, getting along very well, having a clear common mission to improve selection tools for the beef and dairy industry, and complementing each other. It was not a surprise for me that the Cornell Animal Breeding Group had established a long-term collaboration with American Simmental Association, developing and running the genetic evaluation for them. For me as a Swiss, this was another amazing fact. And so Fritz goes on and talks about some of his other times there, including meeting his wife-to-be through some difficult homework that Professor Quass, surprisingly enough, had assigned to his pupils. He concludes with, "Dick, thank you very much for what you did for all of us. Also, on behalf of all your friends in Switzerland and my wife, Shufang Zhu Schmitz, sincerely yours, Fritz Schmitz." So Fritz sends his greetings. He was in his email quite pleased to be able to share some comments with you, and I know he very much treasures the time that you two spent together. So another sort of Swiss Simmental kind of connection. With that, Professor Pollack, if you'll join us on stage, you're our last official speaker. I know you and Dick have a long and colorful history together, and I think one of the things I noticed most about, and this ties into Jerry's comment a little bit, by the time I got to Cornell, you two had really sorted out your complementary relationship quite well. You had the marketing and sales component. And you're a great animal breeder, don't get me wrong. But you had the marketing and sales part of, I mean, it's sort of the two guys, you know, that show up on your doorstep to sell you something. You know, one's got, here's the product attributes, and the other guy's, you know, putting the arm on you. So, you can guess the arm, product attributes. So, Professor Pollack?
Well, thank you. I actually thought I'd be giving this talk, and rather than sitting, he'd be laying flat somewhere. You are older than me. But he's going to hear them, so maybe that's a good thing, and maybe not. Dorian mentioned the pint and the quart. I forget what you just summarized here, which terms you used there, but I think one of the things that I remember that sort of talk about the relationship Dick and I had was we were given a talk up at the Canadian Simmental Association meeting one year, and one of the people on the breed improvement committee came up and said to us, "It's really great to have you two guys here, the mouth and the brain." He didn't say who was who. I'll leave that to you. How many of you were even born in 1977? How many weren't? For those of you who weren't, that's when I first met Dick. So our relationship has gone over a period of time greater than your lifetime. And I think I'll tell you a little bit about those early days. That was my charge. And the rest of my charge was to clear up some of the mystique and aura that's been presented tonight about this individual and tell you a little bit about the person himself. A lot of what I was going to say has already been covered. I went to Cornell in 1977 on a sabbatic, a three-month sabbatic. I was going there with this dream of working with Dr. Henderson. I had planned, I had studied Dr. Henderson's work, I had lists of questions. And when I got there, I went into his office and he welcomed me to Cornell, but then immediately told me he was painting his house that summer, and I should go talk to Dick Kwas. Well, I knew Dick. I had met him before, but all due respect, it was a little bit of a put-down. But all these years later, I think, and it's been alluded to, it's rare that you get yourself into a situation where the sum is greater than the parts. And one of the things I think I will remember dearly about all the work we did together was the synergism and the incredible ability to add more to each other than would have existed independently. After my sabbatic there, I invited Dick out to Davis, and he spent 3 months there. We had a great 3 months working on various problems, proving Henderson right on some of our simulations. I got Dick a house, rented him a house out there, and got him a bicycle, and so every day he'd bike to Davis to come see me. At the end of that sabbatic, there was an opportunity to go to Cornell. And as I thought about that option and applied to that position and was offered the opportunity to actually go, I thought about the interactions I had with Dick, and I think the thing that came to mind was anything was possible. I just felt that the opportunities, the interactions that we had, up until that point, just laid out this tremendous opportunity in front of us. We got together, a couple of papers came out from that initial work. Hans Grosser came through town and told us the Simmental was having their genetic evaluation done at Boeing. Some of the other breeds were at Iowa State. That seemed like tougher competition. So we called Simmental. I called them. That was my task. I guess that's the role of the mouth. Talked to Earl Peterson, and Earl Peterson said that Simmental was very interested in changing their genetic evaluation, but they wanted to use BLUP. And did Dick and I know anything about BLUP? I went up to Dick's office afterwards, and I said, you and I have got a long way to go in this world to convince people that we know what we're doing. But that was a tremendous relationship, Jerry, over the years, as you alluded to. What it did was present us with problems that came straight from the Breed Improvement Committee. It presented us with challenges that came from a breed association that was thinking about moving forward. It was well supported, and it laid the groundwork. And this is where the brain might come in. There were often times when the mouth would proclaim we could do something. Go sit back with Dick in the audience and turn over and ask him, can we really do that? I always had the confidence, however, that with him anything was possible. We went through things like the multi-breed evaluation, multiple trait, calving ease, the animal model. It just went on and on and on through what I thought was just a tremendous time with some of the best minds in animal breeding coming and training for us and challenging us to the extreme in every one of those cases. And they brought so much enrichment to our lives. And this year there's a meeting in Germany. We're going to have a get-together there, Dick, at one of the people's houses. And it's just amazing. However, you've seen about the ice cream. You've heard about the pipe. This one is going to be drinks from every country being brought to this party. So you've heard about the number of countries that have been involved. This should be quite an event. I'll get back to that vice of his later on. The scientific contributions are well documented. The awards have been numerous. But there is always a person behind these things. And as much as I admire and respect the scientists, I do have to tell you there are some chinks in the armor. You heard a little bit about his effort to get here. This is not atypical. Dick went to BIF. His luggage went to one city, and he came to another, Sioux City, Sioux Falls. I don't know how he got on the right plane to come because his ticket was supposed to go with the luggage, but that was Dick. On our first trip to Guelph, we got into a heated debate. And all the graduate students out there, I do want you to know that I suffered a lot of tough love in Dick's office. He does raise his voice, although I think it's because he can't hear himself that well when he's getting into these moods. So he raises his voice just to make sure he's saying what he wants to. We were arguing, and he was supposed to be navigating. And we were headed to the highway. And we're driving along, and he said, turn right. And I did, into the hospital. And I'm sitting in a driveway asking him, what is this? Well, Dick has navigated us through this one town following the big H signs that stood for highway. I was in Colombia 8 months ago. We were supposed to meet in November at a ranch in Virginia to do a little consultation on genetic evaluation. And about 6 weeks before that event, I came to Colombia for a meeting. And the week before that, emails were being exchanged about this meeting. You show up on this day, you do this, I'll meet Dick, I'll be driving in from a different place. I'm at this meeting in Colombia, and I get a phone call from Dick, and he says, where are you? I said, Columbia, Missouri. Why? He said, well, you're supposed to pick me up at the airport. 6 weeks early, Dick showed up for a consultation. We're actually quite amazed, as my wife Jane said, that he didn't end up in a Columbia for which you need a passport tonight. Dick was a Dodger fan when I first met him. We actually watched the Yankees beat the Dodgers in the World Series when I came out here for a sabbatic. He provided the pizza for those games. He became a Yankee fan, and I think Susan will attest to this, that during the Yankee season, or the baseball season, if the Yankees lost, we were a very productive group. If the Yankees won, Dick and I spent about 3 hours that morning going through all the at-bats, the pitches, and everything else. He became, and still is, probably one of the best Yankee fans that exist out there. Pipes, ice cream, they don't hold a candle to gin and tonics. We were flying back one time from a meeting and got into an argument. We happened to have been upgraded, so we were sitting in a very, very classy part of the airplane, and they were serving pre-gin and tonics, and the argument got heated. Susan was several rows back, embarrassed to have known us. And I think the classic quas response of all time to a point I made, which once I made it, I looked at him and I thought, I've got him. He has no rational answer to this. And in first class, after several gin and tonics, Dick's response was one loud raspberry. I don't know anybody else I would have rather have shared those 30 years with than Dick. It was an absolutely tremendous ride, a great experience. Anything was possible. And I hope many of you out there who are starting your careers have the opportunity to hook up in collaboration with people that you can actually interact with in such a way that you just feel the synergism. Because in science and in life, that's a very valuable relationship to have. It's not often somebody can stand up and say, I had a colleague for 30 years, and I considered him my best friend. Dick was a hell of a ride.
Don't worry, Quas. You get the mic next. So, we thought befitting we get a little. I want to have something to give to you. So, from the group here, citation of lifetime achievement presented to Dick Quas, in tribute to his lifetime commitment to the genetic improvement of beef cattle. Presented in Columbia, Missouri. This is June 28th, 2010 at the 42nd Beef Improvement Federation annual meeting. I know Dick's won basically every major animal breeding award. He's a member of the Golden Book from American Simmental, Pioneer Award winner for BIF, Beef Magazine's 40 Most Influential People in the Beef Industry. So I know this may not be at the top of the list in awards, but it's a heartfelt congratulations, and most of all, thanks for your contribution to BIF as an organization and to our industry for not only providing scientific answers, but the practical implementation of those. So, Dick, thank you. So before Dick gets the mic, I don't want to keep you too late, but I hope for all of you, like for me, this has been an hour and a half well spent recognizing Dick's contributions. We'll do open mic for a few minutes here. We don't want to keep everybody too late, but not many occasions we get to pay tribute to somebody that's made as big an impact in our business as Dick Kloss has. So is anybody out there? Larry?
I was on that performance committee for the American Cemental Association back in the 1970s. And I recall very well the meeting in Denver where they knew they needed to move on from Boeing. And Paul Miller was on that committee too, and he endorsed and recommended that they take you up on this generous offer to enter into a cooperative relationship with Cemental. And I seconded it. I remember very well feeling how fortunate they were to have a group from Cornell who was internationally known primarily because of dairy cattle at that point, but could bring all that technology to bear in the beef industry. And what a stroke of great fortune that is and was, because it is what's brought John and Dick to BIF every year since. And I just finished editing the guidelines for Beef Improvement Federation. There's page after page in there that is a direct product of Dick on multi-breed evaluation, on threshold models, on best linear unbiased prediction that have all evolved, and it's all documented as the way we do business in this world. But what a stroke of great fortune that was. You talk about synergism. This organization is far, far better off because of that that arrangement. It's impacted not only Cemental, but the whole beef improvement movement in the U.S. and around the world. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry. Anybody else? Anybody? I'm just going to go right down the line here. Dave, you can give it to Mark when you're done.
I got a place to be. Dick, I don't want to thank you for getting all the equations right in the classroom. What I want to thank you for is getting the equations right for the people that were breeding cattle. In 1958, the grand champion steer at the International weighed 810 pounds, had 1.8 inches of back fat, and had a 6.5-inch ribeye. The champion Barrow that year had a bigger ribeye than the steer. So, Jerry Lenton, maybe Missouri's favorite son, brought Charlays in, and they become popular, and Cemental's followed soon after. I was in the Cemental business very early, and I met you and John and listened to the things you said at BIF. And I believed what you said. I also saw the times when you were visiting with someone that didn't have a PhD that you would explain to them how maternal milk was figured and how you had a minus maternal milk even though this cow was weaning an 800-pound calf. But what's really important is you changed the cattle in America. People believed you and believed the system, because if you said this bull was going to be a plus 7-pound birth weight, he was a cow killer, and he never got used again. Think of the impact of that. Think of the impact you had when we could trust the EPDs, because, John, you didn't have 3 to 5 years to run these cows and see if it worked. We had to take your equations, Dick, and we bet the farm on them. We bet the farm on them when we bred our cows or our heifers to one of those bulls that did well in the sire summary. And I think that you and John, when you won the top 40 and 40 years award, was the finest award you've ever had. Because you were with a comparator in the same league with the Bob Petersons of IBP, with the Paul Englers that fed 1 million head of cattle, and people that bet millions of dollars every year when they bought and fed cattle. And I think it's really fitting to John and to you that this year, we've got the same number of cows in America that we had in 1958. We've got three times as many people as we had in 1958, and we're exporting nearly 20% of the beef with the same number of cows. And when you were doing those equations, and John, when you were arguing with me about maternal milk, we believed you, the industry believed you, and I think that's a tremendous legacy to leave. Not only we people in America that have never went to bed hungry, but that 40% of the people in the world that have held a dying child in their arms that's dying from starvation. Congratulations.
Thanks, David. Mark?
Well, I first met Dick and John at BIF, and that was about 25 years ago or so. I've had the opportunity over those years to witness a number of these heated discussions between John and Dick, and to see that synergy that John talked about in action, and it really truly is a synergy. And one of the ways to illustrate the divergence that results in that synergy is where they sit in the room. When we're at a meeting at BIF or anywhere else, John is sitting in the back, and he's scanning the room to see what the people are doing. And Dick is sitting right here in the front, completely focused on what the presentation is and thinking up what question he's going to ask at the end of the presentation to really drill the person presenting. And Dick, that's been great to witness over all these years, and we expect to continue to see you sitting in the front seat and asking the really tough questions for a lot of years to come at BIF. And we expect you to be here.
Well said. Anybody else want to make a quick remark? You know, I want to keep you all night, but again, this is a great opportunity to recognize Dick's contributions, and I think as highlighted, the contribution of not only the theoretical science, but getting that actually to, as J. David said, to the breeders and the people of the world is truly a great accomplishment, and for that we're indebted. So, Dick, again, congratulations on your achievements so far. I agree with Mark. We want to see you. Hope you keep coming to BIF. You're an important part of what we do and who we are, and we just appreciate you coming and being with us tonight.
I do want to thank you, Bob, for putting on this wonderful event. I wish I could remember the first time I ever came to BIF. I don't know if it was as a graduate student, or it might have been later when John and I were traveling. But this has always been my most favorite meeting to go to, because it does cover the entire spectrum of people interested in the genetic improvement of beef cattle. And it doesn't get hung up in the theory. It doesn't get hung up into completely practical problems. It covers everything. And that's why I think what I could do with algebra, because I did do a lot of algebra, is those X's and Y's were never just X's and Y's. They were pounds of meat. They were weaning weights. They were yearling weights. They were ribeye areas. So to me, if they weren't, it wasn't a problem I was interested in. And I'm so happy that, and then there was a fair bit of serendipity. John and I came along at just the right time. When everything was ready, computers started to grow, and we have had quite a ride. And I want to thank everybody who's here so much. And I do hope, I have to say though, that everybody that wants me sitting down there I come now to see the people, not so much to listen to the talks. Thank you.